Welcome to episode 41 of the Unexceptional Moms podcast. This is part two of Disability Culture and Identity. I am Ellen Stembo, and you can find the transcript and show notes on my website, ellenstembo.com. So Erin and I got to interview our friend Marin, who is disabled, and our conversation was so good that we decided to keep recording and split the episode into two. So if you missed the first part, it's the last episode. Make sure that you go back because it was one of the best podcast episodes that we've ever had. And this one is also really, really great. Marin really opened our eyes to a lot of things. We had a lot of aha moments. We had a lot of wow moments. And I'm really excited for you to listen to our conversation. So something that we really talked about on this episode was expanding more on physical therapy, which is where we left off. And we especially talked about the difference how parents of disabled kids see physical therapy versus maybe how disabled individuals themselves see physical therapy and really their experiences growing up. That conversation alone is so, so good. We talked about maybe finding the balance as parents, how much you push your kids. I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, how much do you push your kids and how much you just allow them to be gloriously disabled and really let them in, you know, to weigh in on their own bodies and maybe some of the interventions that medical professionals could be pushing for. Anyway, it's a great conversation. I can't wait for you guys to listen to that. And another thing that we really talked about, we asked Marin, what is it like for her being disabled to hear parents of disabled children talking about their kids? So what is it like for her when parents are venting? Very specifically, what is it like for her to hear other caregivers talking about the difficulties of caregiving? And if you listen to anything, I really hope that you listen to this. What she had to say was mind-blowing for both for Erin and for myself. It was shocking. It shook us in a good way because we're learning. And to hear Marin's vulnerability talking about those issues, I loved it. I just wish that as parents of disabled kids, we had more and more opportunities to talk to disabled individuals about the super important conversations. And I am so excited for you guys to listen to this. Marin at the end asked Erin and I to share one thing that we felt maybe came in the way of having those open conversations between parents of disabled kids and then disabled adults. And we did talk about language and maybe not knowing what the right language to use is and how that holds us back as parents. And we also talked about the grief piece that many of us, maybe most of us as parents, do go through some grief when our kids are born. So we talked about those things with Marin. So this episode is really amazing. Again, you can find the transcript, show notes, and also, if you want to support the podcast, which we would really love for you to do so, please leave us a review on iTunes. That helps more people find us, and tell your friends about the podcast. So anyway, here's part two. Welcome back to another episode of Unexceptional Moms. I'm Ellen.
And I'm Erin, and we are on part two of our podcast with Marin today. If you did not learn to or listen to the last one, make sure you listen to that because I feel like my mind was blown quite a few times. When we left that podcast, we started on a discussion about physical therapy and as parents, wanting our children to, what's the best way to say this, appear like everyone else. Mm-hmm. A couple of things that came to my mind was walking is one thing, but it was beyond that. It was walking with the proper gait. It was walking so that it looked normal. Mm-hmm. And in our experience, Oksana was very, very like things were moving forward in that direction. And then it all stopped. And we even started to see some regression. Number of factors, some that we might never understand, some that we think we do. And the shift in my brain was very difficult to realize that my goal had to change to giving Oksana what she needed to be able to move through the world. And not be exhausted and not be unsteady and nervous. And I remember the first time I heard someone say, it's okay that your child uses a wheelchair, even if they can walk. And it was so freeing. And I bet it was for Oksana too. So freeing to go, it's okay for you to use that wheelchair because that's going to maximize the strength that you have right now. Why would I want you worn out 10 steps through this museum when you can enjoy the whole thing in a wheelchair? It was very freeing, but I got to tell you, as a parent now, I struggle with the balance between giving up too much of that and feeling like I'm not doing enough for her and giving myself and her the freedom to say, this is okay. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. Are you asking me or Ellen?
Either one of you. Hey, does anyone understand what I'm saying here?
Yes. Does anyone out there understand me? I totally understand what you're saying because it's wanting to encourage them to continue living life in the best way and in the most full way that they can, in the most true way that they can, and like with the most accessibility. And so I can definitely see that, and it's a that's hard, especially when you're raising a child, because there's like, I mean, there's school pushing for PT, there's doctors pushing for PT. And like, as an adult, I've had moments where I'm like, I would like to sign up for rec physical therapy myself, that I will go sign myself up for it. Not because I'm like, oh, I have this like high goal of changing the way my disability works, but like I'm feeling a little bit more sore or a little weaker, or I would like to feel more in shape. And I feel like that is maybe, I don't know, maybe what non-disabled people feel when they want to join a workout place to exercise.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So for me, that's like I'm joining the gym. Mm-hmm. Because I want to join the gym, because I want to feel good. But when you're a kid, you don't have those goals of like, I'm an adult going to join a gym membership. And like, right. I want to like have a healthy lifestyle. And as a kid, what you remember is constantly going to physical therapy. And mm-hmm. so that if physical therapy is the therapy you go to, or maybe constantly going to speech therapy or constantly going to occupational, whichever one it is.
So, Maren, I feel like you just pointed out the huge difference between being a non-disabled person approaching physical therapy and a disabled person approaching therapy. Like, those are very different models.
Yeah.
And for those of us as parents, we only have the voices of those professionals. Yep. The last time that I took my daughter to the cerebral palsy clinic at Mayo Clinic, it's if you don't walk better in 6 months, there's going to be surgery. And it's almost like your punishment for not walking different. And by that last meeting we had, I was a little bit more informed and I was able to say, no, mm-mm, like that's not the reason we do surgery. Unless there's a real need for her body. Like if it's affecting Absolutely. Her body a certain right. way, but if it's just for her to walk more like a non-disabled person,
yeah,
we're not going to put her body through that. And one of her main doctors asked her how much she walks at school. And she said, I use my chair.
I hear that all the time.
Yes. And he said, you need to get up and walk sometimes. And she said, I don't want to. And he said, it doesn't matter if you want to or not. And she just looked at me. And it's the only time since I've known better that I've had the situations that I said to the doctor, you don't have CP. And, you know, they always have. So there were four of us. And I said, you don't have CP. You don't have CP. You don't have CP. I don't have CP. And I looked at her and I said, your feelings are valid. If you can't get up because of safety or because you don't like what kids say to you. I think that's what she said. Kids always comment on my walking and I don't like it. And the doctor said, it doesn't matter. And I said, uh-uh, your feelings are valid. And it does matter. And you're a teenager. So school is not the time for you to have to worry about walking mm-hmm. and then having to worry about what kids are saying about you. Like we have yeah. to respect you as a person, right? Like that personhood. Do I want her to move? Yes, but not because I want her to walk. That's not my goal. It's just I want her body to not be tight, right? Like
right.
To not be, I mean, I wish I wasn't as tight in my muscles, right?
Yeah.
So I know that for her, it's going to be harder. But I also feel like everybody is always asking me about her walking. Like people we know, like they ask, how's Nina? How's her walking? Like that's, I would say 90% of the time, that's the second question they ask me. How is her walking? It's like, really? Out of everything in her life, that's the second most important question. But it was a big deal. Like I said the last time, that was kind of a goal for me.
Yes.
Not for her. That was never her goal. It was my mother goal for her.
I'm just sitting here thinking like how awesome, like way to go for being such a great mom and a great ally to her. And the both of you talking about that struggle and being really honest about that, I just think is really beautiful and really cool. I've told my mom, I'm very proud of her for doing this for me as a child. Because with arthrogryposis, my hands, let's see, how do I give a visual when we're on a podcast, an auditory description. So my hands like are at a 90 degree angle with my arm. So it's like my wrist is a 90 degrees. Mm-hmm. So my hands look different. And I can't bend my fingers. They're stuck in like a straight out position unless I use my other fingers from my other hand to bend them. I can't like bend them by themselves. And I remember growing up and people would kind of like, I remember I was in elementary school and my teachers at parent teacher conferences would always make like a huge deal out of Marin's handwriting is just incredible. She has the best handwriting in the class. I don't think that I did. I think I just had like good handwriting, but I think because my hands looked so different, it was so shocking that to them that I had good handwriting. But my mom could see that I was using my hands perfectly fine. Like that I figured out how to do everything that I needed to do with the way my hands were. And I did it a little bit differently than people did with their hands, but I still did the thing. And when I was really little, I wasn't using my hands. I was using my feet for everything. And she told my physiatrist, who also agreed with her, that he told her, it's okay if she uses her feet for the rest of her life. And he was like, but we can also in therapy work on some exercises for her hands. Maybe it'll give her some options. And my mom's like, well, she can eat with her feet. She can write with her feet. Like, I think she's fine. She can just use her feet for the rest of her life. And I ended up using my hands instead as they were like giving me options. And then my physiatrist, who's known me since like 6 months old when I was all through my pediatric years, is a fantastic person and like the least ableist doctor I've ever met in my life. So he was fantastic and is such a blessing to have him. But I remember conversations with other doctors that it was constantly like them telling my mom, well, she could have surgery on her wrists and we could correct the curvature. And my mom said, why? And they were like, well, so her hands are, so they look like typical. They look normal. And my mom's like, but she has complete function of her hands right now. And they're like, yeah. And then she's like, well, if she had the surgery, wouldn't she lose function in her hands? And they're like, yeah, she would have to work to gain that back. And then she's like, why would we do that to her? Why would we give her more work taking away function that she has in order for her to get the function back? And it was just, they wanted my hands to look like theirs. And my mom was like, no. And I am so glad that my mom did that for me, because I thinking about the surgery they do, I know I would have had less function in my hands than I do today. So but that's it's such a hard thing though, because there are so many parents that are making these really difficult decisions, and like the medical community only gives you like one track usually of what you should do. And they don't, it's like you don't have options. It's like they don't think that there's another solution to help your child.
I'm thinking that there's people listening thinking, I've had surgeries for my kids based on some recommendation that maybe was not necessary. Because honestly, some of the surgeries that my daughter has had for cerebral palsy, that surgery took her back to where she was in strength.
Yep.
And I look back and like, what was the reason, right? And I think it was to improve her gait. It's always been about that. And I mean, I know there's going to be another parent like me who's probably now thinking like, oh my goodness, have I done this? And I think, unfortunately, I don't want to say that we're victims of the medical community, but if we're not experts, so often we rely on the expertise of this professionals, and we do try to make the best, most informed decisions for our kids. But honestly, I never made those informed decisions talking to other disabled people or other people with cerebral palsy to ask and say, hey, did you ever have the surgery? Did it even help? Did it even work? Because overwhelmingly, I'm hearing adults with CP who really wish their bodies had not been subjected to so many surgeries.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I mean, I feel guilty.
I did have one of those surgeries that you said the strength set her back. I had bilateral club foot surgery when I had hip surgery when I was really young, and then a bilateral club feet, and then I have scoliosis, so I had scoliosis surgery when I was 11. But the foot surgery in particular, they did it, I think the reasoning, and my mom and I have talked about it, because like we had conversations, even though I was a child, about what this surgery was and what it may or may not help me do. And so I did understand at the time that they wanted me to be able to bear weight. And with my feet being club feet, I couldn't, because it was hurting my ankles too much. So they wanted them straight so I could bear weight in like a standing frame and gain muscle tone. Which logically makes perfect sense. Totally get that. What we didn't know is that my feet being in casting for that long and the cast being so heavy is that I would lose so much strength in my lower body. And then my hips that were way looser before, the contractures of my arthrogryposis tightened over them over that period of recovery time. And we never were able to undo those contractures. And no one knew that was coming. No one knew that like Marin's hips are going to freeze shut if we have bilateral club foot surgery. And that's just how it happens. And so there were a lot of things that I used to be able to do that I couldn't do after that surgery. That's the thing though. Like even if it's like a surgery where a parent's like, oh, I'm gonna have, I feel bad that I had my kid have this surgery, like listening to this episode, even if they feel that way, I think in any surgery, like any surgery that we have, we don't ultimately know how good the outcome is going to be. And so sometimes it's going to help and sometimes it's not going to. And I think ultimately with the thing with hands of my mom saying no, like she didn't see any benefit to that that would like help me. But what I'm more grateful for than anything was just hearing like my mom say that it was okay that I didn't look like somebody else and not so much that she chose or didn't choose to do the surgery. And so, I don't want parents to think like, oh my gosh, I'm such a terrible parent because I've had my child go through all these surgeries.
Well, no, and parents make those decisions with the deepest of love for their children and the desire to do the absolute best for their children. So I don't think there should be guilt there.
No.
But as we learn more, we can put that in our toolbox of resources as we make decisions in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes. And I mean, so many mind-blowing moments, right, as we're talking with you, Maren, because I'm also thinking about the things that I say about disability in front of my kids. What am I communicating to my kids about their disability? I asked Nina one time, she has cerebral palsy, how do you think I feel about your disability? And she said, I think you don't like it. And I think you wish I was not disabled. And I was like, what have I done? You know, and again, I'm having those conversations, not because I'm like super enlightened, but because I have disabled friends. So then I'm talking to my disabled friends about these things, which then made me think I should probably ask. And I don't think that she could point and say, when you said this, and maybe she could, but she didn't tell me. Actually, I'm sure that she can probably think of certain things I've said. But yeah, even with my typical child, right? I've probably said things that hurt her and that were not very positive and that made her feel maybe bad just because it's the reality of parenting. You say great things to your kids, you build them up, and then you make really not very nice choices as a parent too. And you say things that you don't mean to say or there's whatever,
no,
but.
There's no perfect parent.
There is no perfect parent.
What?
Sorry, Aaron. I know you thought it was so you, hard. But
no, we love you. Trying so hard to get there.
Aren't we all?
Right?
But anyway, I don't think I have anything to say. I'm just thinking through, right, in my own mind, just because our kids are more vulnerable. And I feel like they get from society and from the world, right, that having a disability is bad. And home should be the one safe place where those are not the messages they are getting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yet, as parents, we are a part of this world. And unfortunately, we were taught those negative things. And unfortunately, we do hold some ableist attitudes, even if we really don't want to. Mm-hmm. And we make mistakes. So
I'm excited for that list of books.
I am too. I'm really excited.
I'm working through it myself. So I'm excited to be on that journey of working through the list and building it as I go. But
yes. And for people listening, Maren has a list of books recommended for history of disability and the disability culture that we can read as parents to learn about the culture that our kids belong to. So let me ask you something, Maren.
Yep.
Sometimes as parents, we maybe don't make those negative comments about our child's disability in front of them, but maybe we make them in front of like you and you are disabled. So tell me about what it's like for you as a disabled woman to hear non-disabled parents talking or saying very hurtful things about disability.
Yeah. It doesn't feel good. Yeah. Sometimes I wonder in the conversations when parents with disabled children have shared around me negative thoughts about that, if they forgot that I was disabled for a second, or like they do that whole like kind of how many of us struggle with racism. And we used to, white people used to have that slogan of, well, I don't see color. And we thought that, that wasn't racist when actually it's super racist.
Right.
That I wonder if they were just like, oh, I don't see you as disabled.
Though. Right.
I am. I'm like, hello. Definitely disabled. And I know that, you know, sometimes you're having conversations with other adults and you're like, you just get on the like this venting, like I need to blow off some steam place. Not in like an angry way, but you're just like, oh man, I've been around kids all day and like my kids are driving me crazy. And so like, I need to say something. But like, sometimes for me, it's hard to feel, it's going to sound bad and I don't mean it to, it's hard for me to feel a lot of sympathy or empathy when people talk about how hard it is to be a caregiver. Because as a caree, I don't get a lot of sympathy. And there's no caree support group where we can go and complain about our caregivers. So
mind blown again, Marin, the stuff that you say. Wow.
So like, I don't know. I know that caregiving is a challenge. Like I know that it is, but to hear about it as someone who is cared for, then is like the kind of reminder of like, oh, there's the whole burden complex thing again. There it is. You're a burden. You're a drain on society. People's lives would be easier if you weren't disabled. And it starts this whole spiral thing downwards just because you're like, I know this person is just telling me they're tired, but like, that's not what I picked up from that conversation.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I've been trying to figure out a better way to be able to like exist around those conversations and not go into that spiral. I just haven't figured it out yet, I don't think. But talking about caregiving for your children that are disabled is one of the things that I think people say or don't say, or just implicitly it's brought up somehow. Also when parents say like, when they use language that's like, oh, my child's going to overcome this, is like, I know where they're at in that journey. And like, I used to think that way too, but now that I think differently about that, it's like the sting of like, oh, it's going to take that kid a while to get there by themselves if this is what they hear at home. And so, yeah, and I don't know how to reach into that place where that parent's at and meet them where they're at to have a helpful conversation about that. I don't know if I'm the best person for that when I haven't figured out how to take this sting out yet.
Which I think that contributes to the divide between disabled adults and parents of disabled kids, because I think you're right that we are creating pain for the disabled community as parents. Although we love and adore our kids, I wonder if it's because we try to separate their condition from our child, if that's why, in a way, we reject the voices of other disabled individuals, because we don't see our kid as belonging to this other community with their own culture, with their own history,
right,
with their own pride, right? Because we don't belong to that culture if we're non-disabled, that we make that divide inside of us when we look at our kids, which is not the right way to love our kids, because then we're not loving them fully. They're disabled. That's maybe not right what defines them, but very much a part of their identity.
Yeah.
And how they experience the world and how they relate to the world and even how they relate to us.
I think now that you say that, I wonder if that is a big part of the caregiving aspect language when parents are burnt out from caregiving or they need more respite. That I wonder, because like, let's say you're caregiving for an elderly parent who has dementia. Dementia is not something that you consider part of your parent's identity. So you separate that out and you think, I'm frustrated with caregiving, not because I'm frustrated with my parent, but I wish they didn't have dementia. And I wonder if it's kind of the same idea if someone is congenitally disabled or they become disabled a little bit later in life, that like it's seen as not part of their identity, but more of a disease like dementia is. And like the disease is the enemy here. And that's why I'm so tired. Because the disease is hurting our relationship rather than as a disabled adult. My disability is part of my identity. So when I'm hearing that, I'm hearing your identity is hurting our relationship, which is not what I think they're trying to say.
Yeah. No one saw Ellen do the little mind blow thing, but I've done it about 5 times in this whole conversation too.
I'm just thinking I'm gonna listen to this over and over and over and over again.
I love having this conversation because as we're doing it, I'm thinking of these thoughts that I was like, oh, I wonder if it's like that. I wonder if that's where it's coming from. And yeah, I don't think anyone means to, like, I'm taking it as you're telling me my identity makes you too tired. And I don't think anyone's trying to say that at all. I think they're looking at it like, man, I wish people didn't have dementia kind of thing.
And I do think you bring up a good point, because we don't want parents listening to this to be like, I feel like I'm being attacked or I'm a failure or anything like that. Like, this is all, how can we learn and grow? You know, yes. So my mind has been blown by so many things you've said. And yes, I feel convicted by some of them in a good way, because now I can grow from this experience.
Can I ask the two of you, like, I mean, a lot of this we're talking about, and I'm just sharing, like, this is kind of like difficult to hear in these things. From your perspective as parents of disabled children, and you're not disabled yourselves, what is not helpful for disabled adults to, what is not a helpful, like, breach into that circle? Like, what is a better way or something that you wish disabled adults understood for them to like start that conversation?
I've got something. Ellen, do you have something?
I do, but you can go first.
So my first thought is, as a non-disabled person, I feel very fearful of saying the wrong thing, the wrong word, the wrong phrase. And I have found that in often the correct terminology changes. And I think I'm still using the correct terminology and it's changed. And it's to the point where you're so afraid of offending someone that you just keep your mouth shut. And to be honest with you, I've done it about 20 times just in this podcast. Every time my mouth opens, I go, did I use that terminology correct? Did I? Because people get so offended by that. And I'm not saying that that's wrong in a lot of cases, but I think it keeps a lot of conversations closed because people are afraid they're going to be attacked because they used a word wrong completely unintentionally. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, that totally makes sense.
So I agree with Aaron. I do, on the flip side, let's say like the word special needs or disabled, right? Like,
yes, special
disabled needs. Adults has been told us now for a long time. It's kind of an outdated term and it's ableist. So please don't say it.
Yes.
And I feel like once we hear that, when you have a community of people saying this is what you want us to call us, like the only right choice for us is to say, because we don't belong to that community, is to change it.
Without a doubt.
Yes. And I mean, you know, Erin, because everybody should know she's my best friend. So she knows everything about me, but we talk about a lot of things. And that is a real fear sometimes. Like, what if I say something to a friend, especially if they're disabled?
Yes.
That is going to like destroy this friendship.
Yes.
And that's a real fear. Now, before that, Maren, this is the reality. I don't know very many parents, and that includes me, that when our kids are born and even before they're born, whenever we receive a diagnosis, there's a reality of grief. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's a really, really tough conversation to have between parents and disabled adults. Now, I understand that a lot of grief comes from ableism, but that does not take away the fact that we do go through that. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I don't have the solutions, but we have to figure out from the parent side and the disabled adult side how to be able to have that conversation without maybe disabled adults feeling, you know, like what you're saying, like you feel like, well, you're, that's the caregiving. And, you know, I feel like a burden without. Do you guys know what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
It's even hard to describe
it. I know.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's the, you know, like the first block, like the first building block of so many things.
Yeah.
And that conversation right there is the first really hard conversation to have where I feel like it creates a lot of tension. Because I know now that my grief was based on my ableism, but I still went through it. Like, yes, I can't undo that.
Right, right. I think, too, hearing both of you say those things, one, is super, super helpful. And two, I think something that I miss in a subculture of the group of disability is that the minority of disability is like one of the only minority groups you can become a member of later.
Yeah.
And I was born with my disability. I'm congenitally in the I came in automatically. I had an automatic ticket on the in group. And I know that for those who join this minority later, there's that grief process in a different way, but a grief process for them because they were living one life and now they are living a different life. And there is, I think, a period of people who become disabled where those of us who have always been disabled, like, don't really know how to talk to each other very well because, like, we're feeling two different things about our bodies or our minds. So there's this like grief period that I think those of us who are congenitally disabled need to process more, which is hard because it's like processing something you can't ever experience. Mm-hmm. But like maybe imagining like what if I was put in like a different minority group suddenly, and like everything I knew about my life beforehand is suddenly completely colored by that, and like I can't look at life the same way. Or if you have one disability and then you have another disability, like what I use a wheelchair, what if suddenly I was blind? That would there would be a grieving process in that, not because I think it's bad to be blind, but because I don't know how to navigate the world as a blind person in a wheelchair. And so now I have to figure out how do I navigate the world. And I think it sounds like you're saying that, like, I mean, as parents, you have a disabled child and you have to figure out how to navigate parenthood in a way that no one described parenthood.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, that's true.
Everyone told me, oh, it's going to be like this to be a mom and a dad. And then it wasn't like that to be a mom and a dad.
And that's what you mainly observe, right? Like most people, you know, got to do the traditional route, I guess you could call it.
Yeah. And my mom read a book once, and I forget who the author is, but she quoted something of like, it's like having every itinerary planned out that you're going to go on this trip to Italy, and you learned some Italian, and you like
The welcome to Holland poem.
Yeah. And then you end up somewhere else, and then you're like, well, it's not bad to be here. It's not bad to be in this different country, but I wasn't prepared for this country. Mm-hmm. So now this country is like a culture shock.
It is. Well, Maren, there is so much that we could keep talking to you about. I think we need to have her back, Erin.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yes. Because our time is up.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we need to wrap up. But I thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Here. I've loved being here with you guys. It's been wonderful to get to like see you again. And it's also, yeah. I just love having these conversations.
Yeah.
And it's so helpful to know like the barriers of like language and word use, and then just that grief process, that grief is real and should be cared about and acknowledged. And I think that's helpful for those of us that are disabled to remember. So thank you so much for explaining that.
No, thank you for being here. I'm going to listen to these two episodes a lot. So thanks, Maren.
Thank you, Maren.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
I am so thankful that you joined us today. I hope you found the conversations we had to Maren as helpful as Erin and I did. I know personally this is something I am going to be thinking about for a while. And I really hope that Erin and I can continue to have conversations with people and bringing you interviews and conversations that are going to challenge us as parents to grow, to teach us, to educate us, to just help us not just be better parents to our disabled kids, but also just better allies to the disability community. So again, I'm going to ask one more time that if you don't mind leaving a review as a way to support the podcast, we're going to be very grateful. And you can find all the show notes and the transcript at my website at ellenstumbo.com. Goodbye.